thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I am Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's October 2023, and this is episode 361, which is a conversation about horoscopes. On this episode, I'm joined by Dr. John Ferrer. He is a content creator for Cross-Examine Ministries and a teaching fellow with Equal Rights Institute. John has an MDiv in apologetics and a THM and a PhD in ethics and philosophy of religion. He is also married to Christian apologist Hilary Ferrer of Mama Bear Apologetics. John has written an online feature length for the Christian Research Journal. His article is called, What's Your Sign? Is Christianity Compatible with Horoscopes? And you can read his article for free at our website, equip.org. John, it's good to have you on the podcast again.
Good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, October is a month in which a lot of people in the United States or maybe in the West are focused more on kind of occultic topics because it's when Halloween is celebrated at the end of the month. As a matter of fact, we did a survey on our YouTube channel and someone specifically asked, in the month of October, are you guys going to feature anything coming up about occult themes that we could learn about what a Christian response to that would be? And I said, yes, we are. So this is one of our first of the next few episodes that will have that kind of thematic bent to them. And today we're going to be talking about horoscopes. Now, in the past, we have written some articles, had published some articles on astrology, and all those kinds of things are adjacent to each other. And I'm going to ask John about them. But I just wanted to let our listeners know, I was reading an article from June in the Washington Post, and it was about astrology and also like Gen Z and just the interest they had in kind of that kind of spirituality. And I was surprised to learn that astrology is more than a $12 billion industry and that a quarter of Americans believe in it. And I think John also quoted some statistics in his article, but 70 million Americans check their horoscopes daily. That's a lot of people. So I just want to start out by just asking you, what are horoscopes? Because I think people probably kind of put them all together, horoscopes, astrology, and all those kinds of adjacent type of maybe they, you know, telling you about your life or something about your future. So what are horoscopes exactly?
So horoscopes are an application of astrology. So astrology, as you referenced earlier, is this idea that there's somehow a mystical alignment between the stars and Earth and our lives, so that patterns in the heavens somehow have bearing causal influence on us. We're not talking about light or gravitational pull, you know, laws of physics and things that do have bearing, like the sunlight and the gravitational force of the moon having effects on waves and things like that. We're talking about you can have good luck if you plan for this date. But horoscopes specifically are a sense of you take this astrological worldview where you think that there's causal connection between the stars and us, and then you chart out those patterns into this sort of starry belt around the Earth and break it up into chunks and figure out what month and then what day. And then when you can get it down to a day or a month, then you can locate where your birthday would have been in that what's called the zodiac. Think of the zodiac as the neighborhood and the month, your sign, as the house in the neighborhood. And there are 12 houses in that neighborhood. And your birth date, if it occurs, say, in Sagittarius, that's supposed to signify that you're going to have certain patterns and predictive forces from the stars that bear upon your life. And when people are checking their horoscope, often that means they're checking a daily column in the equivalent of a newspaper or whatever the internet version of that would be now. They're checking their horoscope column to see what that natal chart of their birthday or birth month has to say about their life today. So it might say something like, be careful about making big commitments, or you're destined for love in the near future, things like that. Those are your horoscopes. Or that's what your horoscope would be, and that's the bigger category of horoscopes. But it's, if you think of it as astrology as the big worldview that connects the stars to man, and then zodiac is the neighborhood described in the stars, and then the house within that neighborhood, and whatever the planetary and star alignments were within that house for your natal chart, that is charting what day you were born, that is your exact horoscope. And you have a slight change in all of those movements every day. And so you can get a new horoscope every day.
Well, this is really interesting. You know, horoscopes and your astrological sign, they remind me a little bit of some of those personality tests. And I wonder if that's what really makes people resonate with them. For example, I was looking at the various different astrological signs. And so let's say somebody was born at the end of June, so they would be a Cancer. And so they would read this and be like, this is so me, because it says this. It says, the Cancer, the person who's a Cancer, is motherly, nurturing, and compassionate, but also very moody. So maybe somebody who was born at that, you know, time of the month in June would be like, okay, that's my astrological sign. And it is so on the, you know, hits the nail on the head. Those are characteristics that describe me. I'm moody, but I'm compassionate. So I think people really resonate with that. So I'd like to know, do horoscopes work? And is there really any scientific merit to them? Because again, someone could be reading their astrological sign and say, wow, that like describes me exactly.
You said hit the nail on the head. It's more like hitting the side of a barn. The way that horoscopes, quote, work is by being very nonspecific, very broad, effectively using parlor tricks and psychological biases to sound personal when they're not all that specific, to sound precise when they're actually pretty broad. So when they mention character traits and virtues, they're probably in the ballpark of something most anybody can relate to. A science experiment was done a while back to test how horoscopes work, where it was informal, the original version of it was, but a professor basically drew up everybody's horoscope, and they had a seating chart, and he laid that horoscope on everybody's desk and said, don't look at anybody else's, just look at your own. And then he said, when I tell you, flip it over and read it. And they flipped it over, they read it, and he said, okay, tell me from everybody in here, who felt like this horoscope was at least broadly accurate in describing their life? And like 70% of the people raised their hand. And then he said, okay, now look at your neighbors. And it turned out they're all looking at the same horoscope. And that's how horoscopes generally work. They work using biases, cold reading, guessing, and things that are generally safe predictions. Often these will, horoscopes from what I've seen tend to appeal more to women and tend to play off of women's intuition, feeling, and sensitivity and social cueing, and tends to kind of manipulate and play on that to give us a false sense of knowledge when it's not really telling you anything either that you didn't already know or anything specific enough to be especially helpful. So they give the facade, the false appeal of empowerment and knowledge when it's not really that informative. And then, of course, it really is pseudoscience. It's not specifically predictable enough to where you have testable claims made. So there is no real scientific merit to be found in anything the horoscopes do. But does that mean they don't work? Well, not quite, because all you have to do is use common sense, observation, and educated guessing, and you can make predictions about people's lives. You just have to keep it broad enough so that it sounds like you are using some kind of mystical power as opposed to just observation. In other words, horoscopes don't really demonstrate any real connection between the stars and us. They are, at best, amateur psychology from horoscope writers.
I've got to give a shout out to D. Carter 72, who back in August gave us our most recent review on Apple Podcasts. And that is always such an encouragement when someone does that, because I know that they like this podcast and they want to help other people like it. So here's what D. Carter 72 said. The subject is so relevant and gets right to the topic. This person said, I love the variety of topics and examining current culture through the Christian worldview. The question and answer format is great, and the writers, guests, are very knowledgeable. I also appreciate that they get right to the topic and don't waste the first 5 to 15 minutes doing useless chit-chat and inside humor that so many podcasts do. And I have to say, as a podcast listener, while I don't mind that in some of my podcasts, that is true that some of the podcasts that are an hour long or more, there's a lot of banter at the beginning and they don't get to the topic of the podcast. And so we want to give you not the banter, but a full hour or whatever the length of the podcast is of pure content. So we hope that you are encouraged like D. Carter 72. And if you are, could you please do us a favor and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts? Because that's the main platform when searches come up on the internet where people can see how things are rated. So if you could do that, that'd be great, because it's been a couple of months since we received a rating. We've got 77 ratings total. Some of them are just starred ratings, which is fabulous too. We're really thankful for that. And if you could give us a rating or review, we'd be really grateful. Now, today, as you know, I'm talking to John Ferrer. We're talking about horoscopes, but we have some other kind of October culturally relevant topics. Next week, we're going to do a super deep dive on Edgar Cayce, who's really known for occultism. And I found out some really interesting things about his spiritual background that I did not know at all. It's going to be a fascinating podcast with Lindsay Meadenwalt next week. You don't want to miss that. And then we have another podcast coming up on horror films with our regular film reviewer, Cole Burgett. That's going to come up at the end of the month. So thank you for listening to this podcast, telling a friend, sharing it on your social media. And now back to my conversation with John Ferrer. So you were saying that horoscopes kind of have just vague, kind of non-specific types of information or character qualities that really could apply to any person, that they would resonate with part of it and say, well, that was true about them. But at the start of this podcast, you said there was a larger kind of thing to this, and that is astrology. And then when people think of astrology, they think of astronomy and they think of science and the stars. And you talked about how there were specific constellations that were, you know, connected to these astrological signs. So is there any scientific merit at all to horoscopes? Is it based in any science?
No. There was a time in the past when astronomy and astrology would have been so intermingled that you couldn't really tell one from the other. Much of the motivation for both of those together was the occult belief of as above, so below. This idea that the way the stars are aligned has causal bearing on how things are now. The way things are up there above are somehow reflections of how things are down here. And so interpreting the stars is essentially interpreting social, emotional, interpersonal relations within ourselves and our communities and so on. But that idea has never had any scientific basis. It was pure theology. So that was a time in the past, but we have the benefit of the scientific revolution and many years of charting out the differences between these so that you have a genuine science called astronomy, which can recognize all those same patterns and identify how the planets move and so on. But astrology is not a science in any real sense of the word, any real sense of natural science. It's too theologically charged, too occult in its understanding of causality. And for that reason, we're not surprised to find that it doesn't really have any scientific support in it either. It's not like it's just a different explanation that's not scientifically credible, but it still makes predictions that are scientifically demonstrable. It's not even that. The theory behind it doesn't have any scientific merit, and it's not useful scientifically either. It doesn't make specific enough predictions to have any real viability. All the predictions that it could make can be explained away with cognitive biases and parlor tricks.
But I think something that people, you know, might realize, okay, it's not that scientific, but it helps me, you know, emotionally, or it helps me make sense of this world. It was interesting because in that Washington Post article, they interviewed a girl who said she used to be a Christian, or she grew up in a Christian household, but she didn't really resonate with it. And so she has turned to astrology and horoscopes, and she realized it's not totally scientific, but that's okay with her because it just kind of helps her out in her life. And so she's probably not uncommon. And because 70 million Americans check horoscopes daily, there's probably Christians out there thinking it's okay to check their horoscope. It's kind of like reading the fortune in a fortune cookie, you know, like, I don't think it's very serious, or I just kind of like look into it to see, well, maybe this will be true for me today. Or, wow, I looked at yesterday's horoscope online and that was true. So is it okay for Christians if they just dabble in horoscopes because they know it's, you know, it's kind of like what you said, it's parlor tricks. It's some things they can resonate with, but is it harmless?
Think about it this way. Suppose you were trying to explain to your spouse why a little adultery is not a big deal. It's not like you're going out and sleeping with a whole bunch of people. It's just a little bit of adultery. Would that pass? Well, obviously not. But when we're talking about astrology and horoscopes in this case, you're not talking merely about some pseudoscience, which may or may not work, may or may not be credible, but it's fun. No one's getting hurt. We're not talking about something quite that innocuous. We're talking about something with occult, and religious overtones to it because it streams from an occult worldview, a view of how things are and the causal connections between things, which have no natural scientific basis. So you can't say I'm just operating in the natural world when I'm working on out of these beliefs and ideas. And you can't say it's theologically aligned with Christianity because Christianity doesn't ascribe any such as above, so below type of correspondence between the patterns in the stars and the shape of our lives. That's not a Christian idea. That's a more explicitly hermetic occult idea, which qualifies it more as idolatry than as just a mere pseudoscience. And so the idea of dabbling in something of this nature is dabbling in idolatry. And biblically, the notion of idolatry, the foremost illustration for it in scripture is adultery, basically flirting with other gods or flirting with false religion. And we don't really have quite the same latitude to experiment and explore different religions and different occult theories and false theologies as if those are options within our Christian freedom. We might have opportunity to dabble in music styles or to dabble in food types or to dabble in different cultures. But when you're talking about the occult, dabbling with idolatry is akin to dabbling in adultery.
I think the question would be, what makes it a cult? Because it's based on stars. I mean, it's based on constellations that are recognized, and it's not like it's witchcraft or casting a spell or something along those lines.
So one of the biggest misconceptions about occultism is that it will be easy to recognize. Somehow we think that a practicing occultist is going to be always wearing a pentagram and a pointy hat and, you know, have black eyeliner or somehow wave a big clear flag saying, I'm an occultist. But really, occultism is too pervasive, too much like a fog of confusion to make the tenets of Christian theology blurry or hard to understand, hard to agree with. It's more of a fog in that it confuses us and makes us mistake pseudoscience with science, makes us mistake deception and promising lies for knowledge and truth. Occultism, strictly speaking, occult means secret or hidden, and it tends to refer to hidden power or knowledge. And historically, it's hidden in the sense that it's not allowed by normal Christian means or Orthodox religions. So it is forbidden and thereby secret and hidden power and knowledge. That often locates it within any of the world's religions. But frankly, occultism is too pervasive and too flexible to be relegated merely to other religions. We find ourselves compromising with a bunch of occult beliefs when we think, for example, that if I say a certain set of words, then I can change reality. That's a magic spell. That's how spells work. Spell casting. That's occult belief. And some people will interpret Christian prayer as, I say these words and reality must conform to my will. Well, that's how magic works. Or we think that it's okay to have conversations with deceased relatives because, you know, they're Christian, I'm Christian, we both went to church. I'm just talking with, you know, grandpa up there. I know he's in heaven. Well, communication with the dead is called spiritism. And that's an occult concept. So in summary, occultism, occult means secret or hidden, refers to forbidden knowledge or forbidden power. And there's roughly three big categories of occultism: magic, spiritism, and then here's the big one that ties into horoscopes, divination. You are divining knowledge from other things that aren't direct informative things. So it's not like you are looking at tracks in the dirt and discerning, oh, that's probably this kind of animal and not that kind of animal. That would be interpreting a sign through natural means. But what if you are interpreting the stars to signify that your most lucky day is going to be this Thursday? So you should plan any big choices for Thursday. Well, those stars have nothing to do with luck. I don't think luck even exists. From a Christian standpoint, there's providence, there's God's favor, there's God's cursing, there's God's blessing, and then there's other natural abilities available to us, but there's no such thing as luck. Luck itself is a superstitious concept. And so if we think that patterns in the stars somehow are going to spell good fortune on Thursday in a way that we didn't have access to it another day, that's a superstitious belief. And strictly speaking, you're trying to identify knowledge using means that aren't really connected to that knowledge. Other kinds of divination would be scrying, which is reading a crystal ball and in the opaqueness of it, interpreting things, or reading tea leaves or tarot cards. Those are efforts to divine knowledge from things that aren't naturally connected to that knowledge. So spiritism, divination, and magic are the three big players that constitute occultism. And since horoscopes are a species of astrology, which is a means of divining knowledge from the stars and artificial empowerment from it, that means horoscopes are very clearly occult.
Okay, that would be for Christians, right? But what about non-Christians? I mean, they would say, well, I don't believe in the occult. I don't really believe in anything spiritual. It's really harmless for me to check my horoscope. What would be the big deal? And I think for non-Christians, there is some kind of pull towards it to get some kind of spiritual information from it, just because it is such a huge business. I mean, if it's more than $12 billion annually and expected to grow exponentially over the next decade, it seems to me that a lot of people are willing to pay for this information. So would it be okay for non-Christians to use it?
No. There's a slight defense that a non-Christian can have that a Christian doesn't. Christians should know better. We have Christ. We have sufficient filling for the religious void in our hearts in Christ alone. So we've got plenty of reason not to even be all that attracted to occultism and horoscopes. But just because there's that slight difference, it doesn't really mean that somehow occultism is now safe for non-Christians. If anything, the non-Christian doesn't have the amount of safety and security and protection that a Christian would, being in Christ. There's a big issue here for non-Christians in that they're still falling for pseudoscience, which means gullibility and foolishness. You can get dumber by believing false things. But there's also a religious deception going on here, where people are latching onto a false empowerment, a false knowledge to have greater security, safety, place, sense of meaning in the world. And any of that deception, delusion, and gullibility is bad policy for a person. So it's not really safe for anybody. It's especially problematic for Christians who are grieving the most valuable being there is, which is God. But for non-Christians, it can still wreak havoc on them.
So if we think about discernment, and especially, you know, apologetics is the practice of discernment, we often find that, you know, there's things that are a mix of things. They're good and bad, truth and lies, etc. So when we think about horoscopes, is there any good or truth to be found in it, or are they entirely 100% evil? I mean, one of the things that we covered, boy, it's been a long time. So if you're a new listener, you want to go back into our archives and look up episode 204, where Ann Kennedy and I talked about the Enneagram. And that episode is called The Road Back to Where, a look at self-discovery using the Enneagram. And frankly, the Enneagram has a lot of occult roots, and yet so many Christians use it and feel like it's unfairly maligned, and that they can find some truth in it, again, similar to horoscopes, in that there are things that are true about them and their personality by using the Enneagram, and how they can use that information to work well with other people, like their coworkers. So is there something like that, where people would see it like the Enneagram? You know, it's not just 100% bad, but there's some good and bad, and so therefore it's okay?
That would be too simplistic to say that if there's partial truth in it, therefore it's okay, because most every lie out there isn't 100% false. Indeed, some of the most pernicious and dangerous lies out there are almost true. If you think of it in terms of military strategy, someone who is almost on your side, but, you know, 1% of the time he's a double agent, that person has the most access and can cause the most havoc, because they can get the deepest into the defense boardrooms and the big strategy areas and report back to the enemy that 1% of the time, here's what these guys are planning. And so being partially true isn't quite enough to vindicate horoscopes. And here's the partial truth that I would grant. The stars, planets, they are signs. They were ordained for that purpose in Genesis to signal for calendaring, for the passage of time, for giving light. They're not serving to have the kind of causal connection that astrology says there is, but it serves for calendaring, it serves for timekeeping, serves for giving light. And it also serves, spiritually speaking, as evidence of God's glory. Every star out there twinkling is proof of just how enormous and grand God is. It's been said that, why did God focus so much on Earth if he had all these other planets that he filled the sky with? And I think, according to what this one person suggested, God was just showing off. He wasn't content just to populate and direct a planet. He wanted to just show just a hint of what his creative power can look like, and that's what the stars are. So looking up at the heavens, rightly, I think, should motivate us to worship the great and glorious God who could make all of that. So you've got calendaring, you've got timekeeping, you've got light giving, demonstrating the glory of God and inspiring worship. So in that sense, the stars, the heavens, they are signs. They aren't just sitting there floating around rotating. They are signaling something. They're just not signaling anything occult. And to wrap that up with what you were pointing out, that doesn't get us to vindicating astrology, even if we grant those signifying uses of the stars. That gets us to Orthodox Christianity.
So, you know, when you were assigned this article, I was thinking about horoscopes and looking into it before we had our conversation today. And I was just finding it fascinating that horoscopes are still a thing. I was surprised about that, and that it's such a huge, you know, financially huge industry. Because in my mind, when I think of horoscopes, I think of the late 60s, hippies, you know, Woodstock, that kind of whole era. I don't really think of modernity and, you know, social media and computers and things that are, you know, we've rejected all that spirituality. That's like a thing of, you know, 50 years ago or so.
Yeah.
So why is this whole industry popular? Why are horoscopes still fairly big?
Well, I think one of the reasons is that organized religion is trending downward, at least for Christianity. You're finding fewer and fewer people are identifying as deliberately self-identified Christian. That's creating a spiritual void. Historically, the steamroller of Christian influence in culture has not been to make people more superstitious, but to make them less superstitious. It was a more formal, theologically rich, organizing cultural influence that Christianity brought to societies so that they weren't chasing after all these gods and animistic demigods and all of these spiritual knockoffs, fearing for their lives about all of these different, this pantheon of gods. When Christianity would roll in, it would kind of inspire people not to be scared of all that stuff, not to set out that incense or set out those offerings or be terrified that your ancestors are going to wreak revenge on you. So all of these different false and corrupted religious ideas were kind of being pushed out as Christianity was rolling through in the fourth century, well into the Middle Ages, and then became, you know, the largest religion in the world eventually. But we're seeing some of that roll back. And as Christianity rolls back, it creates more of a void. And if the enemy is anything, he's an opportunist. And he loves to exploit a void. Because deep in everyone's heart, there is a hint of infinity, a hint of eternity where only God can fill it. But that's not going to stop us from trying to throw anything that seems spiritually significant into the well of our own hearts. Yet we find the clanking sound of all of those crystals and beads and star charts as they fall down the well of our hearts. They just remind us how empty we are without God in our hearts. So horoscopes serve as artificial spiritual salve along with astrology. They try to serve to fill that religious need in us. But we don't just need religion. Our religious need is really an expression of our need for God. So they're still popular and they're probably growing in popularity as people are pulling back from organized Christianity and finding that they still have a hole in their hearts. So it's not surprising at all to me to find something so pseudo-scientific as horoscopes growing in this increasingly post-Christian age. Because that's just a reversal of what we've seen for the last 2,000 years or so, that Christianity was rolling out and pressing out of business a lot of these occult establishments and occult beliefs. And as Christianity is retreating, a lot of these occult forces are going to reclaim ground that they had lost before.
Well, you know, if a Christian says, of course, I don't believe in horoscopes, I would never read my horoscope and that kind of thing. What kind of threat do horoscopes really pose for them? Because if, you know, they're not dabbling in it, why should they care?
I think the threat isn't necessarily a five-alarm fire. I don't think it's some big, huge, everybody run for your lives type of danger. I think it's more the threat of an incremental compromise. Relatively few people who identify as Christian actually have a Christian worldview. And so we're not dealing with a reasonably healthy, self-aware, spiritually informed, mature, discipleship-laden church body today. Instead, we're dealing with a fairly anemic, confused, poorly discipled, egocentric bunch of Christians across much of Christendom today. And so that kind of population is more vulnerable. They don't necessarily have the spiritual immune system with robust apologetics to be able to handle relatively minor threats. And so they stumble across personality tests and it can feed their humanism and self-centeredness and narcissism. They stumble across some horoscopes and a little bit of it can foster occult worldview, occult beliefs, because they weren't that far from it originally anyway. And then a lot of people, because they don't have a Christian worldview, they don't really even know that horoscopes even run contrary to Christianity. I'm not claiming anything specific about whether they are Christian or not, but everything outside of the saving faith of Christ, they might still have all sorts of other beliefs mixed in there that are part of what needs to be cut away in the course of sanctification. So I don't think horoscopes constitute this big five-alarm fire, but they are posing an incremental threat, especially in light of how vulnerable and poorly discipled, void of apologetics, so much of Christendom is today.
Well, early in this conversation, I asked you if a Christian could dabble in horoscopes, you know, as long as they didn't really take it very seriously. And some of those folks might say, well, but the Bible talks about horoscopes in a very positive way, like in Matthew chapter 2 in the Gospel of Matthew, when the wise men were seeking out the birthplace of Jesus, they consulted the stars and they followed the stars. So that wasn't condemned in that passage. So shouldn't it be okay for us to consult stars about those kind of matters?
Well, biblically, the clearer message we have from Scripture is don't mess with any kind of divination. Don't do magic, don't do spiritism, don't do divination. And that's mentioned right in line with don't offer your children as sacrifices to the gods. And don't go whoring around with false gods, because they literally had a range of sex cults to choose from that involved a lot of really devious stuff. And so astrology is mixed in with all of that back in the day. So when they're saying don't mess with any kind of astrology, including horoscopes, don't mess with divination, it was tied to a whole mess of idolatry. So it's, in many ways, you could think of it as kind of a gateway drug into harder drugs, religiously deluding, deceiving kind of influences. So the clear message from Scripture is don't mess with divination, including horoscopes. So let that kind of frame everything else we say here for Matthew 2. So first off, for Matthew 2, it's descriptive, not prescriptive. It's not saying this is what you should do. It's just saying this is what they did. Number two, the text says it was a star. It doesn't say a constellation, doesn't mention the zodiac, doesn't allude to anything explicitly astrological in nature. It just says it was the appearance of a star. And a single star isn't quite confirmation that you need to appeal to astrology to get there. Number three, astrology and astronomy weren't all that distinct back then. I mentioned this earlier, but it's possible that the wise men were doing the best astronomy of their day. And because of the day that it was, you know, 1,000+ years before the scientific revolution, it was intermingled with astrology. So they could legitimately have been astrologers, but their intent could have been astronomy, and God might have been honoring some of their intent there. Number four, the clearer biblical text, as we've noted, because they forbid astrology, they should, as a general rule, trump any less clear, implicit, secondary, indirect text that might suggest any favor towards astrology. Let the biblical message, the clearer message, override the less clear passages so we don't end up getting ourselves confused. Otherwise, you end up doing what's called proof texting, where the more clear message of Scripture gets trumped because you found a verse that out of context sounds like it might be going contrary to what these other 24-some verses say. Fifth, and I think this is especially important, the star could be a spiritual vision. So it's a prophetic sign. It's not an actual star in the sky. It's something they saw that God gave them to give them guidance, because they use the stars for navigation, which is a biblical use. And strictly speaking, it's biblical to use stars for navigation. That's how sailors were able to navigate for years before the compass was ever invented. So they're useful for navigation. And so it could be that they had a spiritual vision of a star in a place that would be useful for navigation. So if it's a spiritual sign, we're still not talking astrology. Or it could be in the inner atmosphere, also useful for navigation, but they're not looking into outer space anymore. They're looking in the inner atmosphere. Either way, they could have used this star for navigation to get to the foot of Christ without having to appeal to astrology. Sixth, the wise men didn't even need to appeal to astrology to know there was a messianic signal star prophesied for the land of Jacob. This is Numbers 24:17. So the land of Jacob's Israel. If they had read Numbers 24:17, they would have seen, A star shall come out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel, shall crush the forehead of Moab, and break down all the sons of Sheth. That's from the ESV version. So it was a Jewish messianic prophecy that a star will somehow be connected to this rise of a ruler in Israel. And if these wise men were Zoroastrians, which was a sometimes monotheistic religion back in those days that was based in Persia, which is modern day Iran, then there's a geographical connection where when the Babylonian Empire took over Israel, then the Persian Empire took over Babylon. And so you had an oppressive force over Israel with second-class citizen Israelites in exile under Persian kings. Second, you would have had Israelites in the land of Persia exiled from Israel. And so you would have had Zoroastrians and Jews in close contact with each other, sharing stories about their monotheistic faiths. So it's very possible that Zoroastrians were aware of Old Testament prophecies because they had something in common in being monotheistic. But Zoroastrianism has never been terribly opposed to astrology either. So the wise men were quite possibly Zoroastrians, were quite possibly astrologers, and they would have had access to Old Testament prophecies such as Numbers 24:17. But altogether, this tells us they could have anticipated a star signaling the rise of a new king of Israel, and they didn't even have to appeal to astrology to be able to see the star and to use it for navigation. So the whole story of Matthew 2 doesn't quite get you to astrology. It could be read that way, but since we have an overriding message from Scripture not to mess with any divination, including horoscopes, then we don't necessarily have to go the astrology route to understand Matthew 2.
There are other instances in the Bible where people look to what the Bible describes, specifically in the heavens, and to try to figure out what's going to happen in the future. And one of those times is, you know, end times. Anytime that Christians are wondering about end times and they think that there might be some signs in the sky, what about some of those passages? For example, the Gospel of Luke has a passage in Luke 21, but there are other, you know, apocalyptic type of literature that talks about signs and stars. And so if the Bible's talking about that, shouldn't people look to the stars to find out information about their own life?
So Luke 21, yes, it does say signs in the sun and moon and stars. If we remember the majority message of scriptures, don't mess with divination, then letting the clearer passage dominate, can we understand Luke 21 and that end times prophecy without appealing to astrology? I think we can. For one thing, just because it's a sign doesn't mean it's an occult sign. Our normal understanding of the stars in the sky, the sun, the moon, includes a lot of signaling influence. So for example, if the sun were to start having solar flares, pockets that were popping and looks like large explosions on the sun, that would raise alarms all over the globe because people would recognize that means the sun is becoming less stable and basically our whole solar system revolves around the sun. So if the sun's starting to become unstable, that's a strong sign that the end is near. And I don't have to appeal to astrology to look at the sun and recognize this irregularity poses uncertainty and threats to life on Earth. The same goes for the moon. If the moon started wobbling on its axis, what does that mean? Well, that could mean we're going to start seeing tsunamis because you have irregular gravitational pull and release over the oceans. And so wobbling in the moon would pose a lot of cataclysmic concern. And if stars started falling from the skies, the same goes. So I don't think we have to appeal to astrology to understand how changes and irregularities in the sun, moon, and stars would signal cataclysmic events that are apocalyptic in nature.
You know, there are some people who might be dabbling in horoscopes, but there also might be some Christians who are listening to this podcast or some Christians who know some other Christians who are pretty invested in horoscopes. It's something that they do, you know, ritual for them. And especially for some of the younger generation, where I mentioned earlier in this podcast that we have had a episode on tarot cards and TikTok and Instagram. And some of these readings are very popular that you can get, whether it's a psychic or your horoscope or tarot cards, on social media. So that's been a real way to kind of promote horoscopes. So what about, you know, either someone listening or somebody that they know that's a Christian, and they really do feel really attached to their horoscope? It's a daily ritual that they look at and they say, hey, I really want to know, like you mentioned, you know, what I should do next Thursday. Should I wait until then to make a decision? Because that's when the stars are going to align and whatever I make will succeed for me. So they really, maybe they're addicted, like, you know, next, I've got to wait and see what's going to happen. And the next day is supposed to tell me more. Do you have any advice for them? How should they really think biblically about what they are involved in?
I would say, first and foremost, once a Christian recognizes that horoscopes are basically dabbling in idolatry, they need to confess it to someone who has some discernment, preferably someone older, someone wiser, and find some accountability on it to help them figure out a strategy proportionate to whatever level of commitment they have to it. If it's just a genuinely lighthearted thing that the person just checked it once in a while, then just stop. Just stop outright. This doesn't need to be a big production. It doesn't need to get all sorts of focused attention. Just stop messing with it. And if you find occasional pull to go back to it, fill up with good stuff that is safe, that is healthy, that is righteous. But I think to understand the appeal of horoscopes, it's important to recognize that it can function like a crutch. It tends to operate in a way that gives us a false sense of fulfillment, false sense of knowledge and power. And so rather than being satisfied with these knockoffs, it's important to fill up with the real deal. Socially, horoscopes will tend to give a false impression of how to navigate complex social landscapes, when in reality, it's not empowering you at all. It's giving you a false sense of security, and that delusion can be dangerous. We do better to fill that time, fill that emotional, social, relational void with emotional, social, relationship fulfillment from people. And so I think horoscopes tend to kind of wedge between us and authentic relationships. And the best solution to that is just kick out that wedge and have authentic relationships that are Christ-centered. So church fellowship, community, and accountability, especially if you have a particular addiction or compulsion towards it. Perhaps work out a plan of action to be able to pull out so that you're filling your life with good, healthy, righteous stuff and not ruining your appetite for the divine by filling up on the junk food that is horoscopes.
And I would say, if you're a younger person, or maybe it's one of your kids, then maybe they need to delete some of those social media apps where they would be tempted from all the horoscope accounts they might be following, or the different hashtags they follow for tarot cards or psychics. And it's just such a booming presence on social media. Well, on a much lighter, non-occultic note, I have a fun question for John, and it's fall, John. So right now, would you say that you're team apple or team pumpkin?
Ah, gosh, I've probably imbibed more pumpkin spice flavored stuff in the last few weeks than apple, but I got to be more of an apple guy, because apples for me are a year-round thing. I'll take apple pie any time of day, any day of the week, any month of the year.
Well, thanks, John, for being a guest again on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
You've been listening to episode 361 of the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest was Dr. John Ferrer. He has written an online feature article for our journal. His article is called, What's Your Sign? Is Christianity Compatible with Horoscopes? And you can read it for free at our website, equip.org. Stay connected with the Christian Research Institute and all the new content we have coming your way. The best way to do that is to head on over to our website, equip.org. There you will find thousands of free resources right at your fingertips, from articles to video to audio, and it's all for free. You'll find our podcasts hosted there, as well as the Bible Answer Man broadcast, which is hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and streams live every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. In addition, you don't want to miss out on subscribing to Hank Unplugged, which is the podcast of Hank Hanegraaff. And in that podcast, he has really in-depth, free-flowing, essential Christian conversations with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people. And in addition, he has a new series on his podcast feed called Hank Unplugged Shorts, which Hank goes into the headlines in the mainstream media and refutes a lot of those cultural issues that we have in these short podcast episodes. And there's quite a few of them. You don't want to miss out on them. Now, if you want to find some of this at other places where it's all in one place, really subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's a great way to get all of our content there, our podcasts there, and different individual questions theologically that people have that Hank answers at our YouTube channel. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, I don't know how to subscribe to YouTube. I don't have a YouTube account. Well, actually, you might just have a YouTube account. If you have a Gmail address, you have a YouTube account. Just log into YouTube with your Gmail address and search for Bible Answer Man channel, and please become one of our subscribers. In addition, if you see that bell icon right there on our front page, please click that, and every time that we have new content, you will receive a notification that new content is up on our channel for you to be able to consume. So thank you so much for the ways in which you partner with the Christian Research Institute. We are grateful for you listening and reading and watching.